now. Okay. Oh, this is the most lovely venue. I really love this, and thank you, Paul. It is gorgeous here, and everyone is just so lovely. So I'm kind of going to depress the hell out of you now, because I love you now. I'm very loud. I was born in Arkansas, Arkansas. And I lived in California and New York, and I went to college in London, and I was in London for 10 years, and I was in Galway for 15 years, and I've been in Clare for like 25 years. So I have lots of moving around, lots of identity issues. So that's what I write about a lot, kind of displacement, or, you know, how do you know where you are, kind of thing. And of course, with the DNA thing, you know, you've done the DNA thing?
Yes.
My hair, yeah. I have to laugh because my daughter-in-law's father was born in England, and he's a real Cockney London, and he's always going on about DNA. But he came out 44% English, and I came out 66% English. So that's it for him. So English, you know, Plantagenet thing. But no, basically Irish and Celtic, really. I mean, you know, what else would I be and be here? You know, and this is the best place to be ever in the world. So, but however, as I say, this is all terribly depressing now, so I'm just going to read this called Exile Sequence. And this is quite old, daughter. These poems are written not long after I was in Ireland. So, Exile Sequence. Oh, there we go. I can't do that. Just slightly up.
It's loose.
And I am very loud. Okay, this is called Vision. Exile Sequence, and number one is Vision. And I wake again at 4 a.m. And from the black back door, in a slip of light, I watch a black outline marking against a neighbor's wall, marking the night. And later I dream, floating above the Florida islands whose shining bridges form one great key. And the vision is a vast shape of water, colored like neon cities. And the brightness, which I had not remembered, makes me, in my shape as air, in my very being, a foreigner. America. Where were you going when you took up the stories of all those lost people and laughed across acres of fresh plowed land, rolling as a train through the desert? Where were you going in that hot dust, your words burning the air, choking the breath of trees? Oh, I will always be here, where the smell of the wind becomes lost and the turning of a simple leaf the end of a lifetime. And where you are now, how is it? Do you still hear the tales from those who cannot repeat your words as I never could? Am I silent as the sea? Would I follow you? Would I look beyond memories? Because I have only these of you, straining toward the horizon, covering the mountains. And I see you as I must see you, sea and air, mountains and dust, and the people who are your people are not mine, not mine. And displacement. 17 years and you didn't go back, not once, no, never. I'm not going back now, but backwards. Is this a settling, as in old age, not longing, but boredom for my time, which is just too late? Landscape, yes, I miss the landscape. Who would forget Great Salt Lake or the Greyhound bus station at El Paso? So many images, yes, and they haunt me, haunting as any puzzle or paradox. As any bus station at 2 a.m. I didn't choose. The choice, however it was made, came as Cindy disguised as a sentence of an exile when there is no native land. The search. This is Galway in 1988, and I'm near the sea at last, and I know the tides. There are no hills here, but a river through the town, river to the sea. And here I am at last on a gray day in an old house, and the children skate past the door. And here and there is the sound of birds and the hum of ears as I sit here. And the children's voices might be the voices of birds taking the Atlantic wind on their wings. I could be gone like the wingtip of the heron, vanishing far, far off, back to what has been replaced by a struggle for a new speech, replaced by a language which is spoken by no one but midwater creatures seeking flight. And then I went into my wilderness phase. And I seriously looked for about 3 years, thinking that I could kind of go and have this cabin right in the, you know, nowhere, been nowhere. And I chose Alaska, but then of course I was going to come back to Ireland. And then it turned out to like really just be too far away. But I got absolutely obsessed with living in wilderness. And, you know, this is a thing you're sort of never supposed to do, you know. What? Fumble and everything? Nope. Or I could read a funny one. Oh no, part of the thing was British Columbia as well. Okay, so I went way up north, northern British Columbia, and the nearest town is Whitehorse, Yukon. And it's all very, very lovely. But this is like, you know, like it's Irish, you always didn't meet Irish people. I was doing a reading in this something called Into the Woods in Fairbanks, Alaska. And of course, a couple of people came up and said, oh yeah, we're from Galway. Just amazing. Anyway, Atlin, northern British Columbia. Smoke from forest fires on the far side of Atlin Lake. And at the perfect harbor, boats and float planes rock in the mist. Like their people, knowing the shift between danger and what is simply another summer fire. Oh, hang on. Did I give it a line? No, smoke from forest fires. Sorry, I'll start again. I'm very sorry. Smoke from forest fires on the far side of Atman Lake. And at the perfect harbor, boats and float planes rock in the sun. Like their people, knowing the shift between danger and what is simply another summer day. I found an old fisherman's house that felt like I had just left it. So familiar, it would make anyone believe in past lives. And I wanted to sit and wait for everyone to come home. In the morning light, beyond the smoke, I walked and thought of how this far place could be so full of my memories, so full of beautiful women who owned the land, who walked proudly, whose silver dogs ran in the sea unhindered, who made their own lives. I thought of why I couldn't stay. I thought of why I had to leave. Okay. And then, of course, somebody gave me a cabin. This is the, you know, if you believed in that kind of thing, you'd think, you know, the universe calling your bluff and that kind of thing. But seriously, gave me a cabin on an island. On an island. Off Kodiak Island, you know, Kodiak bears. And the bears used to swim over there, apparently. And not while I was there. And I was there twice. Okay. Haven't been there in years. Have to pay the property taxes on this place. But it's an island, it's actually an island that the Russian Orthodoxy claim wasn't part of the deal. They didn't actually own, when America got a hold of Alaska, it didn't actually get hold of Spruce Island as well. Mm. So this guy was petitioning Putin apparently to take the island back. and I thought this would be some oligarch, you know, somebody like, oh yeah, give me a few bob for it, and it's yours. Anyway, and however, it is beautiful and exotic, but it's simply not practical. But one day I'll go there. One day I think one of these, you know, I will go just to show I could do it, so I could stay for winter. But anyway, this is for Spruce Island, and for Carolyn, who gave me Spruce the cabin. Flying under spruce, we skimmed low-lying clouds and float-hopped along the bay. The arrival low-key, no welcome, just the exhilarating icy blast of adventure. We hiked up to the makeshift cabin, broke the lock, having forgotten the key. No matter here. Lit the fire. A soft snow drifted over from Kodiak. "This is your place now," she said. "Let me show you." And we walked. This is where your land starts. This is where it ends. No one else within sight. What I wanted, didn't want, wasn't sure. I could stay here, yes, happily, with the spirit of Father Herman, who lived on the island for 40 years, who helped the islanders always. His followers kept trying to build a church for him, but never succeeded, the island haunted. I could live here, I could, bringing water over from Kodiak, taking the boat instead of the float plane to save money, stocking up on provisions, walking the 12 miles up the island to Helsinki. I could try, I could, to become part of something sacred. Leaving, there were salmon in a small stream. They rolled down to the beach. Beautiful salmon, coming or going, I had no idea. And yes, because that was in Kodiak Island, it's still all the Russian Orthodox Church and the buildings. It's absolutely fascinating. But you can't actually see Russia from
fake news.
Crazy woman. She almost put me off Alaska, but no. Gonna go there next year, I think. I would read Thicket Road for Mary.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, Thicket Road.
Thank you.
This one, and then that one. Oops. Okay, this is London. I was kind of saved, really, when I kind of fled the States in the beginning of 1971 by falling into a commune. you know, the 70s, none of you remember. Mm-hmm. Some of you do, but not many. Yeah, and of course there were lots of Irish people around there too. And you know what's funny, when you meet people in later in life and you find out they did things that were very similar to what they might have been in London when I was there. Mm-hmm. It's really, you know, so you can see the pattern going. But we lived in this beautiful old Victorian place, and it was a kind of legal squash because we had permission to be there as long as we kept the property, maintained the property, and you know, so we did a lot of work. Beautiful old Victorian houses. So, and I had obviously some fella, you know, or several, and it was true, you know. And anyway, so I wrote one in 1981, Thicket Road, but this is Thicket Road 2011, and for Philippe the aforesaid. Anyway, we went back even though you didn't want to, and stood across the street and looked at the house. Always a beautiful house, a beautiful street. Glorious trees, now massive, looming, emphasizing change and fantasy. Old friends now, we stood in front of the place that held us when we thought we were grown up, when so much had happened with people whose names we can't completely remember, people who were so profoundly us. A 70s commune that wasn't really a commune, with free spirits who played at being free, who cried and laughed at once and pretended wisdom came with letting go of everything until then. And you were full of philosophy and changed my life totally, utterly. We stood across the street on a sunny May morning, and I thought of when I first met you, opening the kitchen door and all the open doors afterward, of my little Tim in Crystal Palace Park looking for tadpoles, a beautiful Mona skipping down the tall steps, Benita's sculptures, of Royston banging on the broken piano, of Lorenzo who befriended pigeons and was the only one courageous enough to take the poor, sad, ill, and black dog for his last walk, of Simon who was so disappointed in me, of everyone in and out of the room and doors, moving in, moving on, and every image, every second, tumbled into me, into us, on Thicket Road that May morning. Here again, and memory is a fracturing, a breaking of light and dark. It isn't that I'm trying to return, only trying to see what never left yet still came with me. I started thinking of cabins again, sitting at my desk, gazing down the valley to the scanner, the hinge in the bay. I started thinking about cabins again, the house on the hill, the old cottage near the docks, moved into memory, even as I lived in them. I started dreaming about cabins again, walking the stones of Clahan, looking out at the stretch of sea, forgetting for a moment that I am slave to a metaphor for purity, enthralled to an image of freedom. This is, okay, San Francisco, sitting in a sidewalk cafe. I went to San Francisco about 4 years ago, and I hadn't been there in 40 years. And it was amazing how much it hadn't changed, because they're very strict about their keeping the place kind of, whatever, stuck. No, even lots of traffic, lots more traffic. Anyway, San Francisco. Shadows on pavement, the taste of the wind, and if you can catch it at the right moment in just the right place, where the air is as clean as the middle of the ocean, you will be everywhere and nowhere and home. When Pune had one main street, an ox cart stopped traffic, everyone was looking for something. So I hear from the white guy at the next table, telling his Indian companion about India. I hear Spanish in an interesting dialect. I think on this corner, every world will pass. I am behind an ox cart in Pune. I'm sitting outside a San Francisco cafe. I'm sitting on a stoop in Manhattan, on a porch swing in the Ozarks. The road goes up, the road goes down, and the wind blows, and it gets cold, and we go inside. And I'll always say that I meant to live in a wild place, where when you step out, the path leads anywhere, everywhere. When you step out, the path leads anywhere, everywhere. I'll always spend a moment being you, hearing of living way beyond the last village. I mean the way a vision might lead, when only your spirit can follow. I mean the deep sadness of knowing that the road will continue without you, that it may be the road always mentioned, the one not taken, the cliche road. The road of so many possibilities and none at all. Only what wasn't done, only lack, only absence. Not even the sound of grass bending, not even the trees breathing, not even the sound of footsteps receding. I might read a funny one. Funny one? Okay, yeah. And then one more. Stay down there. Stay. It. Okay, Skinny Dicks. Now, two of the poets we published were living in Alaska at the time, Jared Chadwick and Joe Insfather, both, alas, deceased. And we had this crazy tour from Anchorage to Fairbanks, which is quite a long, 400 miles. So. And we stopped off at various places, also a place called Homer, which is a lovely. Lovely, lovely town, and they have a big literary festival in this. Anyway, just between Fairbanks and Anchorage is a place called Skinny Dicks. Okay, right, Skinny D's for Jarrah. Between Anchorage and Fairbanks, Skinny Dicks halfway in, the Skinny Dicks' own brand of Alaska Rough. I wanted a sweatshirt, but hung back a bit, talking to a comfortable old dog on the wide front porch. Missing my own dogs would have loved being here, being wild for a time. You came out, bags in hand, smiling at the remembered joke, urging me to buy a shirt. Inside the shop was a cavern, massive, and on every surface, hanging from the ceiling, draped over furniture, t-shirts and sweatshirts, every color, every size, all displaying the same central image. Me and Skinny Dick alone in a cave with copulating polar bears. Everywhere I looked, polar bears were at it. On the sea, a blue, green, yellow, orange, small, large, XXL, XXL, okay. Not one step away from a challenge. I chose green. The XXL bear smiled but happy. Okay, then I'll read a doggy one. Short doggy one and the short favorite one of mine now.
We have to end really soon, Jess.
Yep, short doggy one. Oh no, then I'll just go to the other. Okay. Sorry, I don't know that.
Oh no, I'm going on too long. It's the worst thing you can possibly do.
Okay, this is a favorite one of mine now. This tome here, 35 years. And includes poems like Michael D. Higgins and, you know, Egan Bolin, and that we first published in the Simon Journal as well, a lot of people. Anyway, alien. There are space aliens in the trees in my backyard. Only there aren't any trees. Just mud and rocky holes made by stone-mad dogs digging for dog gold. And once I went out at 3 a.m., and a dissolving star told me that I had only one lifetime left. And I thought of meeting you in another country, you laughing and saying that my middle name, Aline, was alien in disguise. And I thought of all the trees I'd never live in. And I thought of years spent digging for stars, watching their alien sparkle drift through the clouds in the sky, through the holes in the sky, watching their alien sparkle drift through the holes in the sky.